we talk about the space industry here in Australia, and yeah, some of you could tell I'm an American, you know, by background. The accent, you know, has only half morphed over. You know, so I could fool people when I go to the States; they think I'm Irish, give me free beer, which is nice. But I've been here 12 years. I've been here. I've been here longer than I've been anywhere else in my adult life. So I've kind of been adopted by you. I married an Aussie, and I'm here. So I've listened to all the arguments that we've had in the space industry and the community, and it all tends to talk about the opportunity lost. Okay, we tend to stand up and we say, "Here, we could have done these things. I wish we had a space agency, but we don't. So let's go back to sleep." I want to change that argument a little bit. I want to talk about the space industry in terms of disruption, in terms of the opportunities of the future, and in many cases the opportunities of the present, which many of you in this room can handle and be a part of yourselves. You don't have to wait for a government to do it. You can and you should, and you better do it. All right, because it's a decision to make. Do I be a part of this? Do I not? Do I sit back and think about it? Or do I actually do something? All right. So first of all, I said the word disruption. That's got a fairly particular term. All right. So what is a disruption? For me, a disruption is a technology which has a change on the behavior of the general population, okay? So behavior, we're talking about the way you act here on the downstream if you're not a space person, but if you are a space person, it changes the behavior of your purchasing patterns, which is something I think we can take advantage of right now. All right, so to do that, we have to examine what's actually happening here in Australia. So where are we at? Sat back, I thought of it. All right, so Australia, we, depending on who you talk to, it's about $3 to $5 billion per year that we spend on space stuff, right? So we do have an industry. We're spending money, a pretty reasonable chunk of money. And what is stuff? Stuff is mostly, not exclusively, but mostly data of some sort. And that data is used for one or two different categories. It's used for government, so, you know, naval, firefighting, imagery, communications, things of that nature. And it's used commercially, right? So you got this national infrastructure part, and you've got the increasingly important for commercial infrastructure as well. So what are we talking about? We're talking about the growth of Internet of Things, of which Australia is one of the global leaders of it. You've got Australia, Silicon Valley, you know, Technion out of Israel. A lot of technologies in IT and web come out of these places. Yeah, a lot of these technologies for Internet of Things is being used in water utilities, smart cities, mining, agriculture, all those sort of key touch phrases that if you're writing a grant here in Australia, you got to put these things because it's part of our national requirement to use. However, if you think about it, all that money that we're spending on space stuff is all on import of goods or services from overseas. Okay, so example of the NBN Co. Who made that satellite? Okay, did we make it? How much of that did we make? None. All right. So, of any of the satellites that are used by Optus, which is one of the other large space systems, who makes that? Okay. So, what does that mean? We're on an agreement with the United States where if we buy one of the satellites from overseas, we don't even get the schematics. We can't use it. Right. So if there's something wrong with those satellites, you have to go back to the supplier out in the States. So look, not a very good scenario for Australians, but still there's a bit of American in me. So I have to say on behalf of the United States of America, I want to thank you for your contribution to my space program. Great. No, don't clap. No, don't clap to that. I hope this recording doesn't go back to my friends in the States. Don't tell anyone, right? Don't tell anyone. I want to be able to live here and do my craft. I want to be able to live in Australia and do my job without having to move. That's my personal goal. That's why I founded Sabre Astronautics. But look, these decisions are very conscious decisions that have been made in government levels, at commercial levels, and if you think about it tactically, for many years, they have been very sound technical decisions. Even 5 years ago, I was like, all right, I kind of understand why they're doing it for all the reasons that it's expensive to produce and launch a satellite. You know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a major infrastructure. And let's face it, if somebody else is doing it, the insurance and the risk is on them. And if somebody else is doing it, then we could probably arrange some sort of defense collaboration arrangement, which kind of works in our favor in certain respects, right? So, you know, I'm not going to go hard on the government for the decisions they made. They were good decisions for the time they were in. But the result we all feel here at the ground level, right? And I call it the Australian space checkmate problem, right? So we have this import economy of $3 to $5 billion a year, and everything has been structured to support that economy, right? That import economy. So we give tax breaks, pretty massive tax breaks, if we import space goods from overseas. Pretty cool, huh? You two can have a dish, right? And you get a tax break for that. We got nothing for export. We got no support for export specifically for space. We got some things for export elsewhere, but for space we don't have anything. We have this regulatory structure that protects that relationship as well. And ITAR is a part of it. Yes, there is a really good need for... If you don't know what ITAR is, it means that I, as an American citizen, if I sell my product to the wrong person in the wrong way, I get a $500,000 fine and 5 years in jail. Right? So it's serious. So any business in Australia working with businesses in the United States, it's all designed to send stuff out, right? And our culture, we could feel it in this very room. When we talk about our own industry here, there's that kind of feeling, we can't do it, or somebody else has to do it, somebody else, no. So all of that is kind of a result of our history. So that means we get few local suppliers, few local buyers. It's too hard a barrier to enter to become a supplier of space goods here in Australia. It's just too hard. In order for someone to buy your product, you have to actually fly it. Otherwise, they don't care. And it doesn't matter how good of a research program you have at a university. If it's not going up into space, nobody's going to want to buy it. Right? So that kind of brings that circle of unlife together as well. So, look. Sabre, we went to the United States. We got a lab out in Denver. It's very small. We got a small lab in Sydney. And we went out and we started selling our wares and introducing ourselves reintroduction in my case. The feedback I got was, all right, that tech looks great, but you're Australian. You don't do space. You got no space program. Sorry, I got these other companies I'm going to focus on over here. But we got exceptional brand recognition for universities. Okay, so what that means is, culturally, America has a habit of buying from Americans. Europeans have a habit of buying from the Europeans. The Australians have a habit of buying only from the Americans or the Europeans. We don't buy from ourselves, which is kind of weird, but it's true. But the universities are quite interesting because a lot of the grant structure here in Australia is not designed to put money into small businesses. It's designed to put money into the university, which again, sensible decision. Universities are good at research. So the scenario is, if the Americans or Europeans want to play with us, we are great, ripe acquisition ground, right? So they come out here, put $30,000 into a university, get a free PhD student, and work out an IP arrangement where they get to keep the IP, bring it back to the United States. But, God forbid, if we want to make something ourselves, now we're in competition. So, that's the bad news. The good news is that the game has changed. Okay, now this should not be a surprise to anybody in this room, but just to recap, old space, right? Big space. You could do a whole lot with the common commercial spacecraft. $50 million to $500 million is the cost. You could do a lot with that. But there's a whole new group of form factors called CubeSats that range in size either from this big to this big. You know, they 10 centimeter cube is called a 1U. I'm not going to harp on what it actually is. You can't do as much individually with the satellite, the CubeSat, that you can with these large spacecraft. Okay? But look at the price point. Costs $200,000 to start your own space company these days. And I'm seeing them happen all over the place. Right? Think about it. $200,000. That's less than the cost of a Boost Juice franchise. All right, Boost Juice franchise is $600,000 to franchise Boost Juice, right? Yeah, you could have three of these suckers flying around. Anyways, so just by the mathematics, you would say, okay, there's an opportunity here that we could take advantage of. We could certainly do that here in Australia, and you're starting to see the early stages of what I call the democratization of space. So people are, who you don't have to be rich. You could go to a bank, get a small business loan, You need a decent business plan to do that. You could get angel investment funding, and people do this. But people who are not traditionally PhDs, you know, like some of us up here who have heritage, people who love space like you do, who have an entrepreneurial spirit, maybe a hacker kind of a spirit, get some friends together and form a company. And we're seeing a lot of this happening around the world in places like London, Moscow, Tel Aviv, Silicon Valley, San Diego, Sydney, Adelaide, Melbourne. It's happening. So what are they doing? One of two things. Remember that first slide I said, what Australia spends money on? Well, seems to be that's what everybody else is spending money on as well. You've got imagery to take pictures of the Earth, and this is a spacecraft company out of California that raised about $200 million. They started small with $200,000 and then increasing, you know, showed their worth and raised more. They get about 3 to 5 meters per pixel off of this camera, all right, which is pretty good. It's the lower end of the satellite imagery market. So not as good as what you're going to get out of these guys, right? So you're not going to be able to count the number of cars at Walmart from space. But you could certainly count the number of ships, all right? So you could do naval, anti-piracy, agriculture, mining, all these things we care about here. And the important bit, rapid advancement, lean manufacture for spacecraft. Assembly lining for spacecraft, very rare. Okay, there may be two or three other constellations in the world that do it. The reason why this is a new area and it's important is because if you produce 100 satellites, you can experiment in ways you haven't if you could only produce one satellite for $500 million. Okay? I talked to the team, the ops team out at this company, and they tell me if they get bored and they got a new algorithm, they just try it out. I got a spare satellite. Hey, I got this, you know, upload it. Hey, let's try it out. That didn't quite work. So experimentation means rapid advancement of technology in a way that we haven't seen since the computer disruption, personal computers. That's the same kind of path we're expecting. All right, and on the right, SATCOM. Now, 2 years ago, I said, all right, SATCOM, that's much harder. It's going to be a few years down the track. I was pretty much right on track with when this was going to happen. I was very wrong with this one. It's actually happening right now. I've seen two companies in Australia alone, in Adelaide alone, both of whom got their seed funding for 100 satellites to do communications for low volume bandwidth. All right. So, and look, these guys are going to make hundreds of millions of dollars with it, right? And it's pretty cool. All right. So, anyways, so that's really the sign of a disruption is you have one an opportunity, you got a technology. You have people taking advantage of the technology that have never taken advantage of it before. I whacked a couple of logos up on this slide, just friends of mine that I know are doing it. These are just Australians. This is only the tip of the iceberg. If your company should be on here, let me know. I apologize if it's not on here. I'd put this together in a minute. But the point is, this is already happening in Australia. There are at least 20 startups that are working together. Of these, these guys down here have gotten seed funding. Some of these got up here got seed funding and customers. These guys just did a very small but successful Kickstarter. So there are a lot of different ways that you can start from nothing and actually do something with it. All right. So that's what I call the first bump. So a disruption happens in waves. You get a peak, and then you finish with the peak, and then you get another one when there's a new technology at the end of the day. The peak that we're in right now has not yet started. All right, we're at the first year of what I think is a four-year curve. All right, the second one after that I think is going to happen anywhere from 3 years to 10 years. And this is kind of where I start looking into the looking glass a bit. And the further out you go, the more wrong you could be. So forgive me a little bit as I explore science fiction. But 3D printing is brand new. It's on the ISS. You've proven that you can do it. Astronauts have made the very first tools. But what we're seeing are the plans for very large structures for 3D printing. We're seeing technology where you could 3D print electronics, 3D print all these things. So you're looking at the potential not to launch your own spacecraft, but to 3D print your own spacecraft straight from the ISS. All right, which means the cost of a space mission is going to go down from $200,000 to $30,000. All right, so that means even more people can get involved. That's a friends and family round. Hey, you know, mom, dad, you know, can you give me some cash? Hey, Joe, my wife, hey, put in $5,000 here and there. And you have that in no time, and you have your business. This picture on the right is actually old news. This is from 2013. That's the first 3D printed rocket engine. And that was firing at, I don't remember how hot it was, like 3,000 degrees Kelvin, massive hot for 3D printing. You're talking about rapid reduction in cost for very large spacecraft components. All right. Third bump, really going out there, just having fun. You've got three different categories: mining, where you're looking at logistics, you're looking at solar sails. The first demonstration prototype was flight tested, I think it was last year. And you've got reusable launch. Of course, that's much more mature. That's already running. You're talking about much greater operational freedom. So now you're not changing the satellite itself. You're changing the way you use it, right? And in particular, I'm quite excited to see this technology move forward, solar sails, because it means instead of doing an orbit and revisiting customers, you can kind of sail and hold in place and look at the same customers at the same time. Changes the way you interact with people, okay? And, all right, so we're near the end of this talk. So the question I have for you is, what do we do about it? Okay. We here in Australia have things that we can do. We've had the argument in the past of we can't. Let's put it aside for a minute because the environment is now different than it was even 5 years ago. Okay. We need to build a local supply channel. This needs to be done with an entrepreneurial spirit. And oh, by the way, when I say that, I have to caveat a bit with a warning. 90% of all startups fail. Okay, so if you're thinking about doing it, it's a real rough ride. Some of my friends in here are doing it, know what I'm talking about. But more importantly, we need a community, okay? A community of people who are buying and selling from each other. We need to kind of break that cycle of only going back to an outside supplier when we've got some really exciting companies that are young and scrappy and working hard out here to do it, okay? So that's why I put this out here. Buy Australian. Go Dick Smith. All right. So if the government is listening to this, and I do reach out on occasion, I put some advice their way. Some things the government should do is start taxing imports. Boy, is that going to be an unpopular thing with lobbyists. 20% is probably too high. I'm adopting a model I saw in India. The Indians tax any import for software. I think we could imply the same strategy. It worked for them. It could work for us. But probably at a 5%, not 20%. We have to require local suppliers in the channel. That's definitely not happening. There's a cartel related to the top prime contractors. They're going to protect their supply channels for sure. We need to drastically simplify the launch authority. Right now, if you want to launch a spacecraft, it needs a sign-off from the Minister of Innovation. And as long as you're only launching one or two satellites a year, it's not a big deal. But if you're trying to do anything at volume, like some of these companies out of Adelaide that are launching 100 at a time, that man is going to be busy. Look, a couple of funding changes we could do, obviously, changing the grant structures. Of course, I completely agree with what you said. You should be going for customers, not grants anyways. But more importantly, is we got to be more customer-focused and think in terms of acquisition program for businesses and government sales. So that's really it. I put this down here just as a thought experiment, and maybe it's time for a space agency to help coordinate that. That's probably going to spark more debate than I personally can handle. But it's about time we start thinking about it. It's about time we start thinking about it. Start thinking about a space agency to handle that relationship a bit more than is handling now, because nobody really knows where to go. All right. So look, that's the conclusion, three takeaways. If you remember anything at all from this, let's go from import economy to an export economy. That's the first thing we got to do. Entrepreneurial spirit, and here's the key. Fly early, fly often. If you're thinking about doing this, don't say I'm going to make a spacecraft in 4 years. Do it in a year. If it's your first spacecraft, it's a year. If it's your second or third or fourth, it's 6 months. Okay, that's the time scale you should be thinking. You should be very aggressive with that. And I want you to understand that this is an opportunity that is happening now. This disruption is happening now. It's early enough days that if we start today and band together, we can take advantage of it. If you wait, then the condition we have right now will not change. If you get involved now, it will definitely change. Because 90% of this growth for CubeSats is supposed to be in Southeast Asia, right? So that's the question for you. Are we ready to do it, or are we not? That's all I got to say. Thank you very much for your time.